Man, you know how dumb I am? I didn't record the beginning on Audacity.
Say words. You have to pull from
from
Zoom.
Yeah, thank God we're recording separate chats on Zoom. But like, I pulled it up. I was like, oh man, I wonder how long in we are. And then I realized I haven't been recording a single thing.
Damn.
How long is your recording right now?
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Hoops Corner. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, the Iceman himself, smiles and all, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
Feeling good, even though that wasn't much of an all-star weekend. I'm excited for basketball to be back tomorrow.
Oh, we're recording on Tuesday, but we're not launching till Thursday, Josh, so by this point, there's already been games.
Yeah, two below-average games, but at least it's something, you know? It's better than watching the G League.
Oh man, that's harsh. The banger in the paint, well lit 905 fan Rajan Walia, how you doing?
Yeah, there's gonna be no G League hate from my end. You know what, basketball's basketball, and the All-Star game weekend, whatever you want to call it, it wasn't the same, but you know what, it was better than nothing.
Was it, Raj? Was it really better than nothing?
Debatable. Very debatable.
I heard a lot of complaints from you, man. I don't know if it's better than nothing.
You know what? Like, to see Steph win the three-point contest, obviously we finally got to see Mike Conley playing in an all-star game. The way that Dame and Steph were going at it. Giannis hitting three threes in a game. that in itself is enough to talk about. So it's not like an all-star game that I'm going to remember unless it's... for other reasons, like, I'm sure we'll get
into it. Three threes, probably a career high for the guy. The only three threes that actually mattered for him in the game, because nobody cares when you go 16 for 16 if it's all dunks. But if you go 16 for 16 and give me a banked in three and a couple of ugly corner threes, we're okay with it, right? It was kind of fun watching Dame and Steph pulling up from half court, though. I wish Dame won MVP. Hopefully that drives him in the second half of the year. You should have had it.
That was the only fun part of the game besides Jokic and Giannis's chemistry together.
Which was just weird. It was adorable, but Jokic was pretty quiet the whole time. Obviously, we were all watching for him, but like, what did he do, really? He had that one alley-oop that he did a layup with, a couple of fast break runs that he didn't get the ball on, and that's pretty much it.
I meant more so the excitement between each other, like after they made plays, especially Giannis after he made that three. Jokic is going crazy. So just seeing them jump up and down like little kids is fun.
The Jokic and Giannis. So.
It's that Eastern European connection.
Yo, are you calling Greece Eastern Europe? Really?
Well, it's East in Europe, so it's Eastern Europe. Come on, give me that.
Come on, man. It ain't the Balkans. We're not calling Greece Eastern Europe. They're too dark. For Eastern Europe, Raj, I'm sorry.
So where is Greece? What is it like?
It's like Greece? The Mediterranean.
Fine. But hey, you know what? Serbia is around the Mediterranean.
Welcome to the Geography Podcast, hosted by Peter Tran.
Yeah. Oops, geography. There you go. All right. Well, over the weekend, we got some actual NBA news that was breaking. Surprisingly. Blake Griffin is back in the news, guys, for something hopefully not so negative. I mean, the guy's been having an awful year. I think he's averaging like 12, 5, and 3 at most. Clears waivers. Surrendered $13 million off of his contract just so he could leave the Pistons. And then goes and signs a minimum contract with the already rich Brooklyn Nets. The super team is getting more super, even though Blake Griffin seems to be a shell of himself. Raj, man, as the resident banger in the paint, if you will, how does Blake Griffin actually affect this team? Because realistically, man, I'm not buying it. The guy looks so washed this year. Let's see. Should we even be getting hyped up over this?
Well, I think Blake Griffin's membership in terms of his post ability or playing inside the paint has been revoked ever really since he was in Detroit. But obviously, the Nets needed a bit more of a presence in the front court, and just having another player with at least the experience that Blake has, and he's kind of changed his game over the last couple of years. He shoots a lot more threes. He's more comfortable facilitating the offense. And obviously they have Harden and Kyrie to really facilitate them. But I personally think getting Blake at the price they did is a win for them. I still think they need to make one more change to really solidify their position in the East. But you know what? I think it's a net positive. What did they give up? Nothing. They got him on the cheap for a one-year deal, and Blake's going to be happy. I don't know how much he's going to play in the regular season, but I'm sure he'll average at least 15 to 25 minutes in the playoffs.
Hear that, Josh? It's a net positive.
Well done. Well done. Yeah, it just gives them more options overall, especially at the center position. You can play Bruce Brown at the center position, which they've been doing for the most part, especially on offense. And you got DeAndre against the bigger centers. You got Blake, who can play against most guys at the center position, especially if they're trying to play, you know, five out and have him potentially be a roller to the paint. I mean, he hasn't dunked since 2019, but he knows how to make plays on the roll. Like, he'll be short rolling, I think, sort of like in the Draymond Green type of role. And because the Nets have, you know, 40% plus shooters from the three-point line, when Blake gets the ball at the free throw line on a 4-on-3 situation, it's going to be just death for the defense. And he can still play. Like, I don't really believe that his last year in Detroit was, you can't really paint him as that kind of player right now, because I think you have to see what you have in him. I mean, if Batum did it, Boris Diaw did it, I have faith that Blake Griffin, who's going to be a future Hall of Famer, is going to be able to, show something in the next few months.
Well, it really depends on how much coffee he drinks, right? Boris Diaw and Nicolas Batum, both French, you know. That espresso life is very strong.
It also depends how much time Blake has to actually play basketball now that he has his own prank show. I mean, I watched the TNT feed during the All-Star game, and I was surprised how many commercials I saw that.
Double crossed, eh?
Yeah, prank on prank violence.
Yeah. But I think you brought up a really good point with Blake maybe having a little more of the Draymond Green role. Obviously, he's probably not going to be able to play the same level of defense and be able to switch onto as many of the two or three guards that Draymond can do. But I think in terms of the offense, he can help facilitate. He can be an effective screen man. He's comfortable with the ball in his hands. And again, they didn't give up anything. And for Blake, like, he gave up $12 million if you look at the net result. But I think he's going to be happier. He's going to be relevant again. And maybe next year he ends up getting a $6 or $7 million contract on another team and really makes another run at a championship.
Really going to kill these net puns, eh, Raj?
Yeah, well, I don't know what else to do when we were watching the game and it wasn't really much of a game. So I started thinking about Blake and the Nets.
Man, I don't know. Josh, let me ask you this simply. Are they going to hurt more now that Bruce Brown can't be the best backup center in the league?
No, I think going forward, they're still going to start that lineup. I mean, I would. Unless you're playing against Joel Embiid, you might as well just roll with it because that's been their best lineup so far. And they switch more than anybody in the league when they have Brown in that lineup and, with the other four guys. And we forgot about Jeff Green, too. I mean, like, every other fan base has had him on their team. Everyone forgets about Jeff Green. So he's a guy that can run the floor, shoot threes, and sometimes provide 15 to 20 points out of nowhere, really. So they just have more options now, and that's a good thing for Steve Nash.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. You guys talk about options, and it sounds like you're both pretty optimistic, but I mean, have you watched a Detroit game in the past year and a half?
Maybe three.
Did you see Blake Griffin at all?
Yeah, I mean, his effort wasn't really there, obviously. But now that he's got his money, like, he still, maintained his contract. He still got, like, $63 million or something of that.
Whatever. Yeah, he got a big chunk of change, but
he's got his contract from the prank show. Like, he's fully secured. He can play nice and free. He doesn't have to worry about minutes. He just has to have a couple moments in the playoffs, and then his legacy's confirmed, his legacy's secured.
Josh, your money, it doesn't really matter, though. Like, they're guaranteed contracts. Who cares?
I'm just saying, he doesn't have any pressure on him. And that's probably a good thing for Blake, as we saw in previous Clippers iterations, especially in the playoffs, he didn't show up in the biggest moments.
Yeah, and again, like with Blake, he's going to a team where he's going to be the fourth biggest name on the team. In Detroit, he was the guy. He obviously had the big contract. He had the knee issues, both knees. Honestly, I did watch a few Blake Griffin games, but they're the series against Milwaukee, if you want to call it a series, where I think he had maybe 0.75 of a good knee in him. And he still put up decent numbers, but I don't think it's fair to evaluate Blake on Detroit and expect that Blake to be the Blake that will play for the Nets. Like, I think his role is going to be way more defined, and he'll be able to do a little less and hopefully do it really well.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, yeah, you guys are very optimistic about it. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this, because after seeing the guy be barely able to move out there and strictly shoot threes, right? Like, I haven't seen him take any other shots this past year. Maybe a layup or two at most. But, you know, with that kind of play, I mean, even if he's going to move into that Draymond Green position off a pick and roll, or, you know, what David Lee used to do, where he would just pick and then, like, hang out around the foul line and wait for the offense to settle itself, right? Even if he does that, I mean, I guess he's a threat, but unless he's willing to take those shots, there's no real threat from him.
I think there's a theory out there, though, that there's a bit of, like, role depression here, right? So he went from being, like, the number one guy to seeing Jeremy Grant take over that role and, you know, basically be that guy in the offense that gets the ball in the post or gets the ISO plays or gets the ball in the pick and roll. And then Blake became the spot up shooter. And as everyone knows, when you play basketball and you're put in that position where, like, maybe you did really well a couple games in a row and all of a sudden some other players join you and then you become the guy that barely touches it, you don't really feel like playing much anymore. So maybe it was that as part of it. I think that's a certain percentage of what we saw the last year, at least.
Yeah, but that kind of goes contrary to your point, Josh. That means, like, he's not going to be touching the ball at the Nets. Like, if anything, he's gonna go from role depression to role suicidal, you know?
Damn.
No, I think that it's only going to get better for him, because when he gets the ball now, he's going to be wide open. He's not really knowing what to do. This is going to be the first time in his career where he gets the ball at the free throw line. There's going to be nobody around him. He's going to be like, do I shoot a floater here? Or, like, what do I do? I can't dunk anymore, so.
He's going to be looking for DJ for that old Lob City connection. Except there's going to be Bruce Brown on the floor instead.
Yeah, he's going to dump it off to Brown. He's going to shoot one of those crazy floaters.
Yeah. It's not really the same as a DeAndre Jordan lob dunk, but, you know, 2 points is 2 points, I guess.
One thing I will guarantee, though, his three-point percentage is going to be at least league average at 37% going forward. He's going to get wide open looks on the perimeter. He'll have time to, you know, lick his finger, touch the sky, and then let it fly.
Well, considering how slow his release is, he might actually need all that time, man.
It is true.
Do you guys think that they're the conference favorite now? Was there even a question beforehand going into the All-Star break that the Nets would be coming out of the East?
I think they are the best team on paper in the East. Barring any injuries, I think they probably will be the team that comes out of the East. I don't think Blake Griffin tips them over the scale or guarantees it anymore. He just adds a bit of depth, a bit more of a veteran presence. I think one more move of that caliber will tip them over the scale.
I think before the trade deadline, you have to consider them the favorites, but, you know, Philadelphia or Boston makes a move, it's possible they can, you know, jump Brooklyn overall come playoff time.
I still like Philly. I like the way that they match up. I still like Embiid being the guy inside, not Blake Griffin, not DeAndre Jordan or Bruce Brown, you know.
Except when he's getting his haircuts.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's okay, man. He's got to get his cut. He's got to look good for the cameras. He can deal with it.
Philly doesn't have enough. They need Lowry. If they don't get Lowry, they're not coming out of the East.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
I just question Ben Simmons' production in the playoffs. He'll still be able to put up close to a triple-double, but I think they need him to be really dominant on the offensive end to really solidify themselves. Because, again, Brooklyn has three bona fide scores that you can almost guarantee in the playoff game can pull off 25 points each. Like, with like a snap of a finger. So Philly's going to need to be able to score. I think Embiid has the matchup in the East. No one matches up very well with him. So he'll be able to get that. It just comes down to who of the 76ers can guarantee that 20 to 25 points.
You guys ever seen Seth Curry in the playoffs? Pretty good.
Yeah, he's going to put them over the top.
Yep. And then back-to-back champion Danny Green.
If he's still on the team.
Yeah, probably not. Knowing Danny Green's contract, he's probably out of there.
Coming back the to next Toronto. Couple of weeks.
Do you guys remember when the trade deadline is? It's the end of March, right?
March. I think 25th. It's around March 21st or so.
I think it's 25th.
Yeah. 25th sounds very familiar. So I guess we'll see in the next, let's say, 10, 15 days at most, depending on when you're listening to this. But yeah, guys, going into the second half of the year, you know, there's going to be a lot of teams that we got to look closely at. Some teams are going to be making a lot of moves. We just talked about the Nets, who, you know, we think could use another piece or two. 76ers can obviously use a piece or two to be real title contenders. The Lakers can use some health. I think they can really use Anthony Davis with some healthy knees. I think that's probably the best solution for them. The Clippers still need a point guard. I mean, Josh, what team are you like looking at closely in the second half of the year just to see what kind of moves they make?
I mean, for me, since I picked them before the season started, it has to be Boston. You know, Boston wants to get Smart back. I think they'll be fine. But come playoff time, they're still like one or probably two guys short. But they have the camaraderie, they have the chemistry, and Kemba Walker's looked pretty good recently. So even though a lot of people joke about, like, how can Boston expect to be, you know, a contending team when Marcus Smart is such a huge factor for them? I mean, he just is. Like, he is the heart of their team, and he's their defensive anchor. So Utah has Rudy Gobert, Boston has Marcus Smart. And when they lose him, they really lose their defensive identity and how they defend on the perimeter especially. And, you know, if you put him in that lineup with, you know, Kemba Walker, Tatum, Brown, and then Daniel Tice, you have a pretty good closing five there. But I think that they can make an improvement. They still have the trade chip where they can, you know, trade the exception for, you know, $28 million contract or something around that mark. So obviously guys have been brought up are like Harrison Barnes, Buddy Hield, pieces like that that have bigger contracts and, you know, they can trade like a pick and the exception for them. They can't trade a player, I don't believe, for. There has to be an exception for the player. But it's just a matter of, you know, does Danny Ainge do that? Because he's obviously not known to make moves around the trade deadline, even though there's so many articles that come out afterwards about how much he wanted a guy so badly.
Man, the Danny Ainge media tour is always a joy to watch after the trade deadline and after the draft.
Yeah, because he wanted Draymond Green so badly. 4 years later, that article came out.
Yeah, just speaking on Boston, I think they're a few moves away from actually pushing the Nets or the 76ers. And they have the pieces. They need the upgrade. I think they have actually good depth at the center position. It's just really getting that four who can really help them score. Because, again, if you look at their team, they have Kemba, Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and they have one of three of Daniel Tice, Tristan Thompson, or Williams. And I think they have the depth that is required at the center position, but I think they just want one other guy that they can trust off the bench to give you a bit of more scoring, a bit more versatility on the wing.
They need at least two guys, man. Like, they need a better backup guard. Because you can't rely on Jeff Teague to literally perform anymore, right? Like, the guy's been atrocious for the past couple of years. And they have no wing depth. Literally not a single playable person. Like, Semi Ojeleye is not going to cut it in the first round, let alone deep into the playoffs. So, I mean, they really have to do something. Jeff Green would be a great addition to this team. Again, Josh, you mentioned Buddy Hield and Harrison Barnes. Harrison Barnes might be like the perfect fit, to be honest. Right? Like a very solid 3-and-D guy, knows how to get to the cup when he needs to, good defensively, and sort of knows his role now after a couple of years of, you know, chilling on his big-ass contract in Sacramento now. He can just he's already got his money. He doesn't need to prove himself. He's finally matured a bit, and, you know, he is part of that first Golden State Warriors championship team. So Harrison Barnes would be like a perfect fit for this squad.
I think the guy that would really put them over the top, especially with how they play defensively and how quick they can be, you know, as they've shown in the last couple of years in the playoffs, is PJ Tucker. Because you have a guy like Marcus Smart who can guard 1 through 4 because he's so strong. And PJ Tucker can really guard 2 through 5, if not 1 through 5 in certain situations. So you put PJ Tucker at the 5 as one of your possible lineup combinations, going back to what the Nets have been doing, just to have that other option. So you can like play him at the 5. And he's shown he can do that in a pinch. You can't really do that for 25, 30 minutes a game anymore with him, I don't think. But he's another guy that I think once he goes to a team where he's not in a rebuilding situation anymore and his role is completely defined and he's in a winning situation, I think you'll see him perk up a bit again. I think Denver and Boston are the two teams that need him the most.
Yeah. Speaking of Denver, I know, Peter, you're going to ask me the same question, who's my team? So I might as well just jump in. I think they're in the exact same position as the Celtics. They are on the cusp of something very special. They have some young players in Jokic and Murray and obviously MPJ. They just don't have enough, I think, to compete with the likes of the LA teams and now even Phoenix. And I think one of the issues is some of those players like Gary Harris, Will Barton, I think they just, or even Paul Millsap, you're just looking for a bit more consistency or someone who you can rely on in the playoffs. Obviously, Gary Harris, his last 2 years have been injury riddled. So getting another 2 guard who can play some defense, who can maybe space the floor, because we know that Murray likes to play kind of a 2-man game with Jokic, but you want someone just to be able to space the floor, provide a reliable 3-point shot, and play some defense. So we talked about this off the pod, but Oladipo is a player that could be available on a rental to see how it goes. And depending on the price, it might be what Denver's looking for. Like, if it works, great. You can make a deep run into the playoffs, maybe make the finals. If it doesn't and you don't see the fit, you don't have to re-sign him.
Imagine being, okay, I want to pull this back first. Imagine being Houston's GM and Danny Ainge calls you. He's like, hey, man. Hey, Josh, I want PJ Tucker. He's only making like $7.9 million. He's done at the end of this year. He's going to leave. You know, like, listen to this deal. I'm going to give you Carson Edwards and Aaron Nesmith.
If you give them like a second round, like a high second round pick with that, it's not bad for a 35, 36-year-old guy, right? Like, who hasn't performed this year. You want to get back, like, ideally at least 1 or 2 second-round picks, if not a second-round pick plus a young player. And Nesmith is in his first year, obviously. Edwards is, he's a small guard who's probably not going to mount anything, but, you know, it's a flyer, right? So that's the type of thing you're looking for, I think, in this kind of deal.
Could be Aaron Brooks going forward. Alternatively, the Nuggets call you, and they're like, hey, we want Victor Oladipo and PJ Tucker. You know, get a nice chunk off of that. Off of that checkbook that you're signing off on at the end of the year. In return, you can get Bol Bol, RJ Hampton, and let's throw in, you know, we need to make the contracts work. Maybe Gary Harris. That seems a lot more promising than Boston's awful, awful trade. You know what I mean? Like, Denver has a lot of young guys that they can actually put in who have value, current value.
Well, Boston has picks too, though.
Yeah, Boston has picks. And also, we're going to hear a story that Danny Ainge was so ready to pull the trigger in like 3 years' time. So with a much better offer. So honestly, Denver, I think, has more pieces to offer Houston. But I think they need the players more than Boston does.
I think this makes a lot more sense for Denver, too, just based on their current roster construction and what they can give up. I think if you give up those 2 young players plus a first-round pick and maybe some seconds, and make the contracts work with Harris or Barton or whoever, the line of construction there makes a ton of sense if you're getting both Oladipo and Tucker back, because they fill the needs that you've really needed for a while. And getting guys in the perimeter that can really play defense and knock down shots, especially with Tucker being a really good 3-point shooter from the corners. Oladipo can be like a secondary playmaker. He can just be better than Gary Harris. Like, he can be Gary Harris potentially with some scoring.
And Gary may not be Harris like, without the injuries.
Yeah, I mean, well, Oladipo's had his issues the last 2 years as well, but, you know, this year he's been on and off, and they can rest him throughout the regular season as they need to, because they have guys that can start in his place. Like Monte Morris has played well, being the starting two the last couple of weeks, and get Oladipo ready come playoff time. But as a fit, I mean, it just works. It's time for Denver to put the chips in now and try to actually do something. Because if they don't, you can just tell that their management and ownership team just only cares about money and just making the playoffs, and that's their cap.
Yeah, and just because I was talking about this team, I think another piece that could be moved to make it a little more incentivizing for Houston is Jamichael Green. And it's not that Houston needs Jamichael Green, but Jamichael Green could be flipped with another team for another pick, just because he does offer versatility. And if you have PJ Tucker, I don't think Jamichael Green will be playing as much. Obviously, they would love to have the depth. And speaking about Denver, Peter, I know you can probably tell me all about this, but their management, like high up management from the owner, they're all about the bottom line. So I won't be surprised if they don't make a big move. If they just, they're a team that collects young assets, plays them, and then once it gets to a point where they can cash out, they're going to cash out.
Raj, they're basically like Arsenal.
I wonder what the similarities are.
Oh man, that ownership group really doing some work on our teams, man. I mean, I think so, but they were so close to making it to the finals last year. I mean, obviously they got, but they lost in like 5 or 6 games to LA in the conference finals. But that being said, this team made a lot of noise last year. And it's hard for management, it's hard for ownership to say, like, you know, we're just going to chill on this. They've already made a couple of those decisions, like, you know, letting Mason Plumlee walk, even though I hate to say it. Letting Jeremy Grant go, even though it looked like he was on his way out either way. Like, it didn't sound like he wanted to stay. And the low-key loss during the offseason was Torrey Craig. All these guys added defensive depth that the team doesn't really have and that they really need. We've already talked about Millsap and Jamichael Green to length already, but they've either been hurt or they just haven't performed this year. Jamichael Green was thrown into the starting lineup for like 2 games and then got himself, I think it's like a wrist injury that he had off of like a crazy pick play or something. So, I mean, the team should be doing something. Whether they do, it's highly unlikely. I know, Josh, like, we've listened to like a lot of the same podcasts, a lot of the same journalists, saying that Denver is definitely looking around to see what's available, but that could just be smoke at the same time, right? Like, it doesn't mean that they're actually trying to do anything. I highly doubt that they would actually make the move at this point.
And if they are going to make a massive splash, like, I like the idea of Lowry going to Denver as well. I think that really fits their team well, because he's shown that he can play in 2-point guard lineups and defend the 2-guard in that iteration, because he has such a massive ass and nobody can move him. And he's still quick enough to keep guys in front of him. Like, he finds different ways to do that. He's sort of like Chris Paul in that way, where he finds different, you know, tricks, and whether it's holding the guy or, you know, putting his forearm into them so they can't get to the basket right away. And obviously leadership, defense, 3-point shooting. Like, Lowry would just be a perfect fit there, but it depends if they want to give up most of their assets in order to get him. You probably have to give up like both the young players plus 2 first-round picks.
Yeah, see, I don't see Denver doing that. I think they're more likely to take on a situation where they give up a little less and see how things go. And PJ Tucker and Oladipo, I think, are probably a better fit than just Lowry, if you gave me the 2 options.
I think Lowry increases their ceiling more versus those 2 guys.
Yeah, I think he definitely puts them into like real contender position, if, you know, assuming that you get a healthy Lowry, right? This whole year he's been sort of on and off for Toronto, hasn't he?
Not really. He's been mostly healthy this season. When he has played, he's played really well. And he's more of a sure thing than Oladipo, too. Like, if Oladipo played his potential, then I would agree with Raj. But this year, he's only been good for, like, 25% of the season. And he's been injured for, what, 40% of the season? So he's been really on and off.
What if they traded Norm Powell instead? Like, what if Denver just gave up Gary Harris for Norm Powell and guaranteed him a starting spot?
Why would Toronto do that, though?
I don't know. I'm just trying to get starting Norm Powell to Denver.
I mean, if you get starting Norm Powell to Denver, like, his shooting splits are insane when he starts. I think he's at, like, 50, 43, 92 or something like that. If you look it up, it's actually, like, really impressive.
Sounds great to me.
Yeah, see, Peter, you might as well book the parade at the same time if you get starting Norm Powell.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, we're going to Mile High. How about that? Straight in June, July, whenever they're going to have the finals this year?
I think July.
Going straight to Denver, man.
Sometime in July.
Yeah, I hope so.
Canada Day.
In Denver.
Yeah.
That'd be impressive if they only got delayed by like 2 weeks. Because usually the finals are around like mid-June, right? By the end of
like June 1st, it usually starts and it ends like the 10th or so.
Yeah. Well, considering that the league started like a month and a half later than usual, that'd be insane if they still cranked it out by then.
And the Olympics is late July, right? So they have to finish before then.
And also, I think, obviously, the shortened season, 72 games, they compressed it. There's just like more back-to-backs, more games in a shorter amount of time. Like, I think it's going to end July, mid-July or early July.
Yeah. All right, well, I want to move on, guys, because the last team that I want to talk about, or I don't know if I want to call it a team or if I want to call it a situation, whatever. It's at like 10th, 11th spot in the West. Obviously, we know how New Orleans started the year. They were awful defensively. Still awful defensively, don't get me wrong. But their offense is flowing a bit more. Zion Williamson has started to play point forward somehow, some way. And despite his awful, awful performance in the All-Star game, he's come on. Dude's shooting like 62-63% from the field. And he's an absolute monster. But that being said, they're still 3 games behind Memphis for that 10th spot in the West to get into the play-in tournament. Once we get into the play-in tournament, I figure, you know, anything could happen over the 2 games or however long that they have to play against each other. But to get to that point, you still have to perform. And, you know, with Memphis's record going into this, you know, they went through a lot of postponements. New Orleans was obviously just shaky, and I think they had like a couple of games postponed as well. So both of their schedules are going to be jam-packed going forward. So my question for you guys is, you know, do you see the 9th and 10th place spot in the West changing? Do we see New Orleans being able to get in there? Or do they end up just trying to sell off some of their guys and be like, hey, we'll prep for next year. Buy Lonzo, buy Redick, you know, bring in someone else that we can build around for going forward.
I think their biggest decision now is what they do with Lonzo, since, you know, he's up for a contract extension in the offseason. He'll be a restricted free agent regardless. And it's a matter of, do they want to spend that kind of money on him and how much is he going to make? Like, if he's going to get a 4-year contract for 80 to 100 million, which is definitely possible based on the numbers that he's putting up this season, do you really want to go forward with him? Because the lineups with him and Zion have actually been really good. But at the same time, he's been really inconsistent over the course of his career so far. So how much do you believe in him, first of all? And that's going to sort of sway the thinking of how they're going to go forward. But I mean, even if they do sell off some of their guys, like if they trade JJ Redick, for example, then you have Josh Hart playing more minutes, and that's not necessarily such a bad thing. So even by trading off some of their guys or veteran guys, they might end up still being in the mix for the 10th spot regardless.
Yeah, like I think the Pelicans are probably the most interesting team in the Western Conference, in the sense that they have to make a decision. Are they going to prepare for next year or kind of really push for a playoff spot? Because all the other teams, it's pretty well established at this point. Obviously, the teams below them, like the Timberwolves, Rockets, Kings, and Thunder, they're not really going to go for the playoffs. They're all about developing their players. And I know you're going to mention the best team in Texas, but let's just forget about that. And
San Antonio, let's go.
Yeah, that's not the Mavericks, so I got that part right. But I think another team, like the three teams that we really gotta like discuss if they're in win now or if they're win later mode, are the Grizzlies, Pelicans, and Spurs. And I think especially with the Grizzlies, they kind of have their path set out. I think their rosters have a lot of young players. It's even if they're not going to make the playoffs, the players are going to get the development they need. And they have kind of a set core group of guys, especially when they get Jaren Jackson Jr. back. They're going to have their core group of guys, and they're basically going to say, win every game you can, and if we make the playoffs, great. Speaking about the Pelicans, though, I think the issue is they have a lot of players that, even if they did make it to the playoffs, I don't think they know they have a reasonable chance to pushing the team like the Lakers, the Jazz, whoever's going to be that number one seed. And I think, yeah, the Suns maybe. Again, that's Josh's dream situation, I guess.
Those are my boys.
But I really look at this team like they have decisions to make about players like Steven Adams. They have like Steven Adams, players like Eric Bledsoe, Lonzo, obviously, as well, J.J. Redick. And I think right now it's probably better if they just start selling off some of those assets, because they need to get those young guys getting more minutes, more opportunities, and making the playoffs really won't. They'll get an extra 4 games to their season. Like, they'll play 76 games, and that's it.
It's a harsh reality.
I mean, it could be a good situation to get Zion some playoff experience, but at the same time, you obviously want to get some future depth and, you know, possibly a high first-round pick while you still can, because come next season, with the management that they have, you'd expect them to be in the playoffs next year, having Ingram and Zion and a good management team in place and hypothetically a good coach in SVG. That I think that's still yet to be seen in modern day in 2021, because he makes a lot of late game mistakes. But overall, like with the roster, they should be trying to sell off all the older guys. And the one thing that was sort of confusing at the start of the season was they extended Adams' contract by 2 years. So I don't think he's actually tradable this season. So that was a very questionable decision. I mean, they should have went with Horford, honestly. Like, he would have fit perfectly with Zion. But obviously they can't do that now. So I think trading Bledsoe and J.J. Redick is a priority now, and trying to get anything you can back for them and hope you get like positive value for Bledsoe, which I'm not even sure if you can right now, because he still has a year or two left in his contract, and he's a good player. It's just he's not a starting caliber player anymore, I don't think. He's more of like a six-man type, and he was at his best when he was a six-man for the Clippers way back when. Like, he was dominant off the bench at times.
You think that was Eric Bledsoe's best, was with the Clippers?
I think that was his best role. I think that, you know, come playoff time, that was his best position to be in, playing like 20 to 25 minutes off the bench, going full board, and not being relied on offense like he was with Milwaukee, taking a lot of shots that he just wasn't capable of hitting.
Interesting. I would have thought, you know, Phoenix was a good time for him, other than when he said he wanted to leave his wife's nail salon or whatever it was.
I mean, he had his best statistical year then, but he didn't make the playoffs, right? And, you know, I just think that he's best in that six-man role where he can play either guard position, wreak havoc on defense, and then sometimes get you buckets.
It's true. All right, well, so do they finish the year with Lonzo and Redick, Josh? Yes or no?
Redick is going to a different team. I think Lonzo, they're not going to trade, and I think ultimately come the offseason when somebody offers him a massive number, I think they're going to let him go.
I think Redick is going to go. I think Lonzo has a chance to go before the trade deadline, and they might get a few younger players that are, I wouldn't say unproven, but like they're players that they aren't established starters in the NBA, and it could happen. I do think the Pelicans are better off just playing their young guys, letting Zion take control of the games more and running the offense through him and Ingram. I don't think they're as well run a team as the Grizzlies, and I don't see them really pushing for that playoff spot. But you know what, if they decide that their management wants to get in the playoffs this year, then they could possibly push the Grizzlies. But the other teams ahead of them, I think, are just better basketball teams and are probably going to be 1 through 9.
Yeah, I could see all of that. Josh, you got any stats corner?
Yeah, I got a couple things for you. So some news first. The Basketball Hall of Fame finalists for 2021 are Paul Pierce, Chris Bosh, Michael Cooper, Ben Wallace, Chris Webber again, Tim Hardaway Sr., and Marcus Johnson. And in terms of stats corner...
Is that how many times has Webb been up? Webb's been out, should have been there for like 10 years by now.
Yeah, it just there's obviously a lot of complications with that. He should have been in the Hall of Fame a long time ago, like you mentioned, though. He's a lot better than a lot of players that have been in, like Mitch Richmond. Not to hate on Mitch Richmond, but come on. So in terms of stats corner, there are 95 players who have shot the league average of 36.8% better than 103 point attempts this season. There are teams with four or more of those players. Can you guess who they are?
The teams?
Yes, that have at least four of those guys shooting over 36.8%.
For a second, I was like, I'm not going through 92 players, Josh. Like, that's a whole podcast on its own.
So there are 11 teams in total that have four or more players that are shooting over 36.8%.
You spoiled one of them earlier. Brooklyn?
Brooklyn has five, yes. Mm-hmm. Raj?
I want to say the Miami Heat.
Miami is not on the list. You were thinking of last year, sir.
Mm.
Wow. What about Milwaukee?
Milwaukee has exactly four.
Mm. Non-All-Star Chris Middleton. Boom.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to say the LA Lakers.
Incorrect.
Wow, I'm
how have you guys not guessed the number one team?
Is it Phoenix? That'd be pretty funny.
Phoenix has four players, so they're in the bottom iteration of this. So yes, you are correct.
Wait, how many does the top team have?
Seven.
Wow.
There are two teams with seven.
Wow, okay.
When you watch basketball, who shoots the most threes at the highest efficiency so far this season? And one has really stood out.
The Jazz, yes. Of course.
Jazz are number one at seven, tied with another team in the Western Conference.
Silly old us. Why didn't we think Rudy Gobert was shooting over 36.8%?
Of course.
Another team with seven guys?
Mm-hmm. Seven guys shooting over 38%?
That's a lot, man.
This team is the best three-point shooting team in the league. Yes, the Los Angeles Clippers.
With Paul George shooting lights out. Yeah.
And Reggie Jackson, too.
I was going to say Reggie, MF, and Jackson.
He's played well this year.
Damn. All right, how many more do we have?
I think you have about five more. One of them is a league pass darling this year.
The Hornets?
Yes, Charlotte has six.
They are the darling of league pass, not A. They are the darling.
Yes, yes. One team is basically relying only on three-point shooting this season since they've had a ton of injuries in the Western Conference.
I was going to, before you mentioned that, I was going to say the Toronto Raptors.
Toronto is also tied for five.
Yeah.
So they are in the same category as this team, having five guys.
Okay.
Houston?
No.
The Dallas Mavericks.
A surprise team after all the injuries that they've had. Not Dallas, though.
Oh, Portland.
Portland, yes. Portland has five guys as well.
Who? Like, who shot minimum 100 attempts on their team from three?
Probably Trent, Lillard, Melo, maybe?
Even CJ McCollum might have hit it earlier in the year.
Yeah, well, he was
that dude was jacking him up.
He had 11 attempts per game, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I could believe that. All he needs to do is play 10 games to qualify.
Yeah.
Damn. CJ. All right, how many more is that, Josh? Like two more? Three more?
You got three more. One of them is a huge surprise in the Eastern Conference, even though they're a bad offensive team.
Oh, don't say the Washington Wizards.
Mm-mm.
No, good. The Knicks.
The Knicks, they also have four players.
Wow, okay.
The other team we talked about a lot in this podcast already, they need to get another one or two guys in the Eastern Conference.
Boston?
Yep. And the other one is the Western Conference version of them.
The Nuggets. Wait,
you said the Clippers, Josh.
The Nuggets, yes. So lastly, there are four teams that only have one player shooting over league average right now. And two of them Raj already mentioned.
Oh, geez.
I love this.
Two of them I've already mentioned. So we would have to go with...
The Wizards.
The Wizards, yeah.
Oh.
Beal's actually
more
shooting.
More than one guy?
Beal and Bertans, maybe.
Maybe Garrison Matthews?
Mm-hmm. Robin Lopez? No.
The Lakers?
Correct.
Yeah. And who else did I say? The Mavericks.
Nope. The team that the Lakers played in the finals, surprisingly.
Wow.
Miami?
Wow.
Miami only has one guy. I think Duncan Robbins is at 39%, and nobody else is over league average.
It's probably because they haven't got 100 attempts in. That's probably it.
That would actually make sense. Yeah, they did have like 2 weeks of games postponed. So.
And a bunch of injuries on top of that.
I was going to say, between their biggest like shooters, you're looking at Hero and Dragic, who both missed like 10 games minimum. So,
yeah.
Makes sense.
And the last two teams are in Texas.
Is it the best team in Texas?
Surprisingly, San Antonio. only has one guy, even though over the course of the last few seasons, they don't shoot a lot of threes, but they make a lot of them. But not so much this year, I guess.
Who is it, Patty?
I don't actually see the names here, but I would guess so, yeah.
My bad. I didn't want to spoil your knowledge here.
Yeah. And the team, of course, is Houston.
Yeah.
They probably don't have a single player that's shot over 100. Actually, PJ Tucker doesn't even shoot anymore. It's probably Aaron Gordon, the only guy that actually has, like, qualifies.
It's probably Christian Wood, man.
In, like, the first it might actually be Wood, to be honest. I'm checking it right now. But
yeah. He's definitely the best shooter on the team other than Eric Gordon. Man, that's tough. All right, well, good stats corner, Josh. Good stuff. And I think that's all the time we've got for this week. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe on iTunes. Leave us those comments. You can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, all the major podcast platforms. We're on Instagram and Twitter at Hoops Corner Pod. And until next time, peace.